The recent National Summit for Women's Safety was held last week, where it held a panel discussion on the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders' experiences of family, domestic and sexual violence. During this discussion, panelist Professor Marcia Langton emphasised the need for a separate national plan for First Nations people and community-led programs. Here to discuss the outcomes of the summit is co-chair of the National Family Violence Prevention Legal Services, Winnetta Dwoyce. So back in 2011, the Gillard government created a national plan to reduce family and sexual violence, which will lapse in June 2022. Despite this, rates of violence against First Nations women are rising. So where does the current plan fall short and what reforms are required?
Yeah, as you mentioned, yeah, it's a national crisis with our First Nations women, you know, with the impacts of domestic and family violence. And what we're seeing, you know, 32 times that our women, are, our First Nations women are 32 times more likely to be hospitalised due to family violence. They're 10 times more likely to die, and they're 45 times more likely to be the victims of violence. What has the plan, the current plan done to reduce violence, as you mentioned, or, you know, there hasn't been much reduction. And, you know, it's a national crisis at the moment. What the National Family Violence Prevention Legal Services are calling is for a national action plan, a standalone plan dedicated to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander First Nations women and children. And this is something that we've been calling on for a number of years, you know, and it's to address this disproportionate rates at which Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women experience violence. And it can't be achieved through an overarching national plan. And that's why we're calling for a separate dedicated plan. We're also seeing, and it came up through the National Summit around early intervention and prevention as well. So we do have services that are doing the work, but they need more investment to be able to meet demand. We see services that are just at capacity and they're not even able to service communities. And a lot of them are probably even working outside of their scope. For us, let me just bring up, if you don't mind here, housing is a big issue as well. We're seeing a lot of overcrowding with First Nations families. And obviously with the overcrowding and multiple families living together, then all of these other social issues arise, and domestic and family violence is one of those. So meeting that housing issue as well. So in the past, just speaking to, you know, around intervention and prevention, in the past, FVPLSs, so that's the Family Violence Prevention Legal Services, which there are 14 of us nationally throughout Australia. So we've reported in the past that up to 30% of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women in contact with our services are turned away due to lack of resources and capacity issues. And that comes back to what I was speaking about, just the need to invest in early intervention. There are a lot of services that are doing work. They need that doing the good work, they need long-term investment as well, because domestic and family violence is not just a quick fix, as we know. I mentioned the housing issue. Misidentification, we feel, also needs to be addressed. So where we're seeing Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women being incorrectly identified as the aggressor or the perpetrator, that needs to be addressed, whether it's training of the police force, but that's a concern for us, because then we're seeing that could lead to incarceration and then the removal of children. So there could be, you know, unintended consequences from that as well. So that's some of those things, yeah.
So Professor Marcia Langton, she stated in the National Summit for Women's Safety that women's safety programs have become a bit of an industry, resulting in First Nations voices being ignored. Would you agree with this assessment?
What I'm agreeing with is the silencing of our First Nations women in general. We had to, as a national, the National Secretariat had to fight to even get a seat at the table at the National Summit. So that's where I'm saying the silencing of our First Nation women's voices. And we work on the ground with them, we advocate for them. And I think that's what the concern is, that with this national plan going forward, that you've got to have the right people there, you've got to have the voices of the victims there, and not for our First Nations women to be silenced.
So you've mentioned this throughout our chat so far, but as well as in this summit, another point made by Professor Langton was that in rural communities, all the main services are run by white people and the Aboriginal leaders are marginalised. When we consider not only the trauma of violence that these, you know, of family violence, but also the role of intergenerational trauma, how does that factor into the like importance of having First Nations people leading these programs?
Well, I think firstly it speaks to a national agreement that was signed around the Closing the Gap, where it talks around you know, collaboration and partnering with ACOs and Aboriginal controlled organisations. So I think that's something that should be considered and needs to be taken on board and addressed appropriately, because what we're seeing is that in the community, you do have your, like, for instance, we outreach, I'm the CEO of Queensland Indigenous Family Violence Legal Service, so we outreach to over 60 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities, but we don't have it. I don't mean it to be all about a funding issue, but we don't have the resource or the capacity to consistently service these areas or be established in these communities, whereas the mainstream organisations and these white organisations have the majority of the money. And so they can then, you know, it's a lot easier for them to come in and out of community a lot more regularly, and just the servicing. So I really feel that there needs to be specialised services. What I'm talking about is, for instance, FVPLSs that are Aboriginal controlled organisations that are specifically working with victims. There needs to be specialist services, and they need to be that culturally appropriate service as well.
So you mentioned earlier, I actually wanted to ask you about how you guys weren't initially invited to the summit and, like you said, had to fight for a seat at the table. What kind of message did that send to your, not only to your organisation, but this whole concept about focusing on First Nations voices?
Well, I think the unfortunate thing and the message that I felt that it sent was that, again, it was the silencing of the actual First Nation victims, the women and the children, because that's who we are there advocating for. Like I mentioned, there's 40 of us around the nation and we're out there. We were established because there was a gap in the service provision for victims, First Nation victims of domestic and family violence. So that's why we were actually established. And to not have us there, I think it just, that just tells, sends a message about, okay, they're not really considering their voices. And that's what I felt by us not being at the table.
Yeah, it was quite quite disappointing to be, in my opinion, to be honest, but unfortunately not too surprising. Just to finish up, how would you rate the overall success of the summit? Do you feel that it addressed and achieved what was needed in terms of the needs of First Nations women when it comes to the family violence sector? And do you think that this plan is going to make the changes where the last plan fell short?
Look, it was good having a national conversation. That was good, you know, getting everybody together. We had governments there as well at the table. We had NGOs, we had academics. So it was good getting that national conversation happening. There was very clear messages that were put forward, and I feel that if they're not taken on board, then it'll be like, you know, people sort of saying, well, how could we be any more clearer? Then, I mean, if you would have seen some of those panel discussions, they were quite, you know, direct in just what were the challenges that First Nations women are finding. So I really just feel that if they don't take those on board, again, it's just lip service. I don't mean to be a negative, but I think time will tell. I suppose that's what we're just waiting to see. And the first thing is not just us, but there was a majority calling for a separate national plan. So it'll be interesting to see if that's taken up. It'll be interesting to see around, you know, some of these discussions around early intervention and prevention and more primary prevention investment, you know, or strategies around that. That's where I feel, you know, there were discussions, but it's the where to from here, I feel, is the gap. I know it's not an easy thing to tackle. I get that. But then again, if, as I said before, if they weren't aware of the issues before this summit, that they most certainly are now for First Nations women. And that's just scraping the surface. But it's about, I think, what we're trying to say and what they were trying to bring across in that national summit is that action needs to be taken. You know, serious action needs to be taken. It just can't be lip service. It just can't be for a political reason. These are women's lives that are at stake and families' lives that are at risk, you know, with children being removed. And so I think that's where a lot of people have just had enough. And so they just really want government to take action now.
Thank you for joining me. That was Winnetta Dubois, co-chair of the National FVPLS on the National Summit for Women's Safety and the Needs of First Nations Peoples in the Family Violence Sector.